from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy, Text 6. Tavat.
Until then.
Bhayam.
Fear.
Dravina.
Wealth.
Deha.
Body.
Suhrit.
Relatives.
Nimittam.
For the matter of.
Shokaha.
Lamentation.
Spriha.
Desire.
Paribhavaha.
Paraphernalia.
Vipulaha.
Very great.
Cha.
Also.
Lobhaha.
Avarice.
Tavat.
Up to that time.
Mama.
Mine.
Iti.
Thus.
Asat.
Perishable.
Avagraha.
Undertaking.
Arti Moolam.
Full of anxieties.
Yavat.
As long as.
Na.
Do not.
Te.
Your.
Angrim Abhayam.
Safe Lotus Feet.
Pravranita.
Take shelter.
Lokaha.
The people of the world.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O my Lord, the people of the world are embarrassed by all material anxieties. They are always afraid. They always try to protect wealth, body, and friends. They are filled with lamentation and unlawful desires and paraphernalia. And they avariciously base their undertakings on the perishable conceptions of my and mine. As long as they do not take shelter of your safe lotus feet, they are full of such anxieties. Purport. One may question how one can always think of the Lord in regard to His name, fame, quality, etc., if one is embarrassed by thoughts of family affairs. Everyone in the material world is full of thoughts about how to maintain his family, how to protect his wealth, how to keep pace with friends and relatives, etc. Thus he is always in fear and lamentation, trying to keep up with the status quo. In answer to this question, this verse spoken by Brahma is very appropriate. A pure devotee of the Lord never thinks of himself as a proprietor of his home. He surrenders everything unto the supreme control of the Lord. And thus he has no fear for maintaining his family or protecting the interests of his family. Because of this surrender, he no longer has any attraction for wealth. Even if there is attraction for wealth, it is not for sense enjoyment, but for the service of the Lord. A pure devotee may be attracted to accumulating wealth just like an ordinary man, but the difference is that a devotee acquires money for the service of the Lord, whereas the ordinary man acquires money for his sense enjoyment. Thus, the acquisition of a wealth by a devotee is not a source of anxieties, as is the case for a worldly man. And because a pure devotee accepts everything in the sense of serving the Lord, the poisonous teeth of accumulation of wealth are extracted. If a snake has its poison removed and bites a man, there is no fatal effect. Similarly, wealth accumulated in the cause of the Lord has no poisonous teeth and the effect is not fatal. A pure devotee is never entangled in material worldly affairs, even though he may remain in the world like an ordinary man. Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tamsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Shrestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarini Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyaeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. We are continuing with Brahma's prayers for creative energy. Brahma has been glorifying the Lord in very suitable verses. Having established that the Supreme Lord is actually the complete absolute truth, He is the ultimate reality, and that one must take shelter of Him, He speaks about the benefits of taking shelter of His lotus feet. And He speaks of it in a sense of establishing the consequences of not doing so. Sometimes we try to emphasize the importance of something by speaking about the consequences of not doing it. If you don't follow the law, then this is what will happen. If you don't stop at the red light, this is what will happen. So what you're trying to say is that, look, you must stop at the red light, you must follow the law, and so on. So Brahma is trying to explain the consequences of not taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And he's emphasizing this part of it because that is the situation of the conditioned living entities in this world. So he uses the word tavat twice. Till such time as, or until then. He says, till such time, till that time rather, till that time one will, what will one do? One will be bhayam, one will be fearful. Fearful of what? Dravina deha suhrin nimittam. One will be always fearful about protecting and maintaining one's wealth, one's body, one's family, and so on. One will also be filled with all sorts of material desires, unnecessary desires. One will be filled with lamentation, shokaha. One will try to accumulate all sorts of unnecessary paraphernalia, paribhavaha, in great quantities. And one will be afflicted by greed for accumulating more and more possessions. Mama iti. Mama means mine. So the greed for acquiring more and more of something and then calling it mine. Asad avagraha. And therefore one ventures into these undertakings which have very temporary results. The benefits of which are very, very temporary, arti moolam, and they are full of anxieties. So this is the situation of a person, yava, till such time as he doesn't take the shelter of the lotus feet, your lotus feet, Brahma is addressing Krishna. Yavan nate anghim abhayam pravrinita lokaha. Pravrinita means to take shelter. Lokaha refers to the people of the world. So till such time as the people of the world take shelter, do not take shelter of your lotus feet, Angrim, which award fearlessness, Abhayam. Till that time, they will be afflicted by all these mental anxieties and fears, the acquisitive tendency, and so on and so forth. So this is a very beautiful statement, because we see the condition of the living entities is factually like this. People are always anxious about something or the other. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Prahlad is speaking to his father, and his father is expecting to hear some nice demoniac talk, and Prahlad instructs him on some unpleasant devotional realities, and he tells him, Tat sadhumanniya suravarya dehinam sada samudvigna dhyat asatkrahat hitvatma patam grihamandakupam vanam gatoyat harim ashrayeta. He says, my dear father, the best of the demons, one should give up this materialistic life. Why so? I think it is good to do that, because for one who has taken shelter of falsity, of illusion, of that which is asat, which is not true, asat grahat, when one has accepted that which is untrue as being true, then one becomes constantly anxious. Tat sadhu manya suravarya dehinam sada samudvigna dhyat asat grahat. Sada means always. Udvigna means disturbed, anxious. Samudvigna means completely disturbed. So when one takes shelter of that which is illusory, which is not reality, then one is always anxious about something, because one doesn't have a very stable and a safe platform. So one's consciousness is always hovering on the ever-changing, fluctuating situations and events and people and things of this world. So we are like in a roller coaster ride, up and down and up and down. Once you're sitting in the roller coaster, you're not in control. The roller coaster will take you up, sometimes it will take you down. So also, once we are in this world, then we are on a roller coaster ride. We go down and up and down and up. And that causes so much anxiety to us, because once you are down, then we lament. And once we are up, we are happy, but we are still anxious because we are anticipating the next down. So we're thinking, oh, the next misery is going to come along. And that's exactly what's going to happen, because that is the way Lord Krishna has designed this material world. He's designed it in such a way that when one anxiety comes along, the other is waiting at the door. And these anxieties are very rude by nature. They don't have good manners. They come into your door without your permission. Sometimes they bang the way through the door, enter into your life, even though you don't want them. They come in like uninvited guests who storm into your house and take control of your life. So one who is living in the material world, devoid of spiritual consciousness, is always filled with anxieties of one form or the other. So the safest path, Brahma says, is to take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. And these lotus feet award auspiciousness. They award fearlessness. So Prahlad continues to instruct his father, and he tells him, hitvatmapatam, one should give up that place which is atmapatam, a place which is very harmful for spiritual life. One should give up such a place. Griham andha kupam. Griha means a house. Kupa means a well. Andha means a blind well or a dark well. Sometimes in the scriptures, ordinary household life, in which there is no Krishna consciousness, is compared to a deep dark well, in which there is no water and there is only suffering. You look into that well and there's nothing there, and one is situated in that deep dark well. Because non-Krishna conscious family life can be very, very entangling. It can cause us to get absorbed in material things and to completely forget Krishna. And one may start thinking that this is the goal of my life, to enjoy life with my loved ones. That's what life is all about. So if I have some good relationships in life, that's everything. Of course, even that is very difficult nowadays. Relationships keep breaking up because sadas samad vigna dhiyat asatkraha, because everyone is living on the platform of falsity, of illusion. The relationships cannot sustain unless they are based on a platform of reality. So Prahlad says that one should therefore not be situated only in a deep dark well. If one takes shelter of Krishna, then even if one is in family life, one can remain reasonably stable and happy. Therefore, vanam gato yad harim ashrayita. One should go to Vrindavan and take shelter of the lotus feet of Hari or Krishna. That is Prahlad's instruction or advice to his father. The father, of course, doesn't take to it very kindly, because the father doesn't want to take shelter of Vrindavan or Krishna. So taking shelter of Vrindavan or going to Vrindavan doesn't necessarily mean that we have to leave Melbourne and go there and live in Vrindavan, as we were discussing yesterday evening. What it does mean is that we have Vrindavan here in the form of the Radha Vallabha temple. We should come here regularly, participate in Krishna conscious activities like hearing and chanting and serving and so on. One should make one's home Vrindavan, and ultimately one should make one's heart Vrindavan. So when one always thinks of Krishna, then we are always living in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada also makes for the second half of his purport an interesting point about wealth. He says that when one becomes a surrendered devotee of the Lord, one no longer has any attraction for wealth. And even if there is some attraction for wealth, it's not for sense enjoyment. It's because one wants to use that wealth for Krishna's service. If a devotee is engaged in the act of acquiring wealth, he or she may appear just like an ordinary person of the world who is materialistic. But there's a gulf of difference. A materialistic person acquires wealth for sense enjoyment, and a devotee acquires wealth for the sake of serving Krishna. So when the devotee acquires money, the devotee does it with the understanding that this is Lakshmi. Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune. She is the consort of the Supreme Lord. So she is always engaged in the service of Lord Narayan or Lord Krishna. So therefore, when we get Lakshmi or money, the money must be used in the service of the Lord, who is the proprietor ultimately of all that wealth of Lakshmi. However, if we do not use the Lakshmi that we have, the wealth that we have, in the service of the Lord, we will use it for our sense enjoyment, and then we will be implicated in the sinful reactions of that enjoyment. So when materialistic people get wealth, that is a gift not of Lakshmi Devi. It is a gift of Maya Devi, of illusion. When devotees acquire wealth, then that is a gift of Lakshmi Devi. Therefore, devotees should be very cautious of how they use their wealth. They should not whimsically spend their money on frivolous things that materialistic people spend their money on. Going to casinos, going to the pub, going to the cinemas, or even otherwise unnecessarily acquiring so many appliances and gadgets and so many things at home, accumulating things. The materialistic mind has a tendency to keep on accumulating things. We want to have more and more. We have clothes and we have shoes and we have this and we have that. There have been famous instances of political leaders who after they were deposed from power, it was discovered that they had like 300 pairs of shoes, 500 pairs of shoes, 1,000 pairs of clothes, each day a new set of clothes. Yes, so there's no end to this. So therefore, a devotee doesn't whimsically spend money, because a devotee understands this money is not just money. It's Lakshmi Devi, it's the goddess of fortune, she's a goddess. So we must treat the goddess very respectfully. We must engage her only in the service of the Lord, not otherwise. Otherwise we treat money very just as a means to our own enjoyment. Sometimes people say that, well, without money, you know, you can do nothing in life. And therefore I would, even spiritual life is not possible without money. Well, to a certain degree that is true, because we need money to eat, to survive, we need some shelter on our heads, we need some clothes in our body. So to a certain degree it is a fact that we need some wealth. However, wealth alone is not enough. After all, there are so many people who are wealthy who are not devotees and who do not have any spiritual inclination. Sometimes people challengingly ask us questions and they say, what is the use of you spending money on temples or on the deities and Krishna consciousness when there are so many people who are hungry? You should feed the hungry. And of course we sympathize with the pain of hunger that people who are poor feel. So we have no objection, certainly, to feeding the hungry, and devotees feed prasadam. We distribute prasadam everywhere. But the point is that will eradication of poverty or eradication of hunger automatically make that person inclined towards spiritual life? Imagine if we were engaged. People say that, well, on a hungry stomach you can't think of Krishna. Well, yes, to some degree it's true. But it's also interesting to remember that some of the greatest devotees in history have been very poor by destiny, and some were very poor by choice. Some were very hungry by destiny, some were hungry by choice. Sometimes they voluntarily fasted also. So, hungry people have also been in history, or poor people have been great devotees. That doesn't mean that we're advocating that we should be hungry. But the point is that there are sufficient number of people with stomachs which are more than full, but who still have no inclination to spiritual life. What this means is that one's economic status, one's social status, is not necessarily an indication of one's inclination for spiritual life. Spiritual life is completely different. It is not connected to anything material. Why does one become a devotee? Why does one have an inclination for Krishna consciousness? Yesterday we had a trip to the botanical gardens with the brahmacharis, and we were discussing this theme yesterday. There is something called devotional credits, bhaktyonmukhi sukriti, unknowingly acquired devotional credits over many lifetimes. For example, we hear the holy name being chanted by devotees in the streets. We may have no idea who Krishna is, who Ram is, but we hear the name because some devotees are chanting it. Or somebody comes and gives us some delicious prasadam. We have no idea of the significance of prasadam, but we just take that prasadam because it's delicious. So in this way, over many, many lifetimes, we acquire devotional credits. And eventually, when those devotional credits accumulate sufficiently, that results in a natural inclination for spiritual life. So the inclination for spiritual life doesn't come because one has wealth, or the inclination doesn't get suppressed because one doesn't have wealth, although a basic standard of living is essential to maintain the body. But the spiritual inclination depends on the accumulation of devotional activities that we have knowingly or unknowingly performed in so many lives previous to this one, and even in this life previous to today. So that is how the devotional inclinations come up. Therefore, sometimes you see little children also who have a strong spiritual inclination, a natural, spontaneous inclination. And sometimes you have 90-year-old people who are very strong atheists. So even after hearing so many things, they do not develop any inclination for Krishna consciousness or spiritual life. So this is the situation of wealth. Wealth is something that can be used very nicely. Even for Krishna's service, we use so much wealth. Could this temple be running without money? After all, the bills have to be paid for the electricity. We make so many wonderful offerings to Krishna that cost money. And we have to do so many other programs. Prasadam is fed to so many people every day. So because the money is being used in Krishna's service, Krishna is also sending money. Srila Prabhupada gives another interesting analogy here. That of a snake that has been defanged. You know, a poisonous snake has fangs that are filled with poison. So when the poisonous snake bites one, then we also get infected with the poison. However, if the poisonous fangs are removed, then even if the snake bites us, there's no harm, no damage done. So similarly, if we use wealth not in Krishna consciousness, but only for sense enjoyment, then that wealth will bite us. It's like a snake that will bite us. And we suffer the sinful reactions of that. So it's dangerous. Just like fire. Anything of the material energy can bite us if we don't know how to use it properly. For example, if you don't know how to use fire properly, it can burn you. Let's say you want to cook, or you want to use the fire for something else. If you're not careful, and if you don't know what to do and how to do it, we will burn it. We will burn our fingers. Or there can be some other catastrophe. On the other hand, fire, when used properly, can be used for so many beneficial things. We can cook wonderful meals. We can use it to keep ourselves warm when it's very cold, and so on. So things in the material world, generally speaking, are neutral. And we employ them for something good, and we say this thing is good. But when the same thing is employed for something bad, then it becomes bad. A fire can burn down a place and cause destruction. A knife in the hands of a surgeon can save somebody's life. A knife in the hands of a murderer can take away somebody's life. So similarly, money is not in and of itself good or bad. Money can be good, money can be bad, depending on how you use it and for what you use it. So when a devotee of Krishna uses money for Krishna's service, then it's like a snake who is being defanged. And therefore that wealth cannot harm the devotee. But of course the devotee is still very cautious, because the devotee is humble and the devotee is intelligent. So the devotee prays to Krishna that you're giving me money, but please give me the intelligence to use this properly. Please give me the humility to not get proud that I have so much money. Because when we contact the material energy, there's always danger that we may get infected by lower ways of thinking. Just like Brahma also prays to Krishna after he's being empowered to create the world. Please bless me that I should not get proud that I'm the creator of the world. So to find a person who is humble in poverty is not so difficult. Because poverty grinds you. It crushes you. And you're forced to become humble in some situations. Of course, some people even in poverty are not humble. Even the pauper is proud of his penny, as the saying goes. But generally, one can become humble because one is so helpless that one tries to become humble. Or one is forced to become humble. But if someone is humble in the midst of opulence, that is something special. And we find many examples of great devotees who were poor. And we also find many examples of great devotees who were very wealthy. And sometimes people may misunderstand them. They may not recognize them to be great devotees because they're living in a big house or something like that. For example, Pundarik Vidyanidhi was a very, very great devotee of the Lord. But he lived just like, in Prabhupada's words, a pound shilling spence man. Meaning that he lived in the midst of so much opulence, silken clothing and all sorts of soft silken bedsteads and silver paraphernalia in the house and so on and so forth. But he was constantly absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So when we are devotees, we try to see that we don't feel proud of the wealth that may come. We don't get attached to the wealth that comes into our life, knowing it is a gift of Krishna. We know the story of Sudama, who was a childhood friend of Krishna, and his wife, urged him repeatedly to go to Dwarka to Krishna to get some money, to get some help, because Sudama and his wife were very, very poor. And so poor that they sometimes didn't even have food to eat. They had just one set of clothes each, and those clothes were also torn. And Sudama, being a pure devotee, had absolutely no inclination to go to Krishna and ask for money. But anyway, in order to please his wife, he said, "All right, let me go. And anyway, I'll be able to go and see Krishna." So Sudama went to see Krishna, not to get money from Krishna, because he was a great devotee of Krishna. And even after he went to Dwarka, he never asked Krishna for a thing. Krishna treated him with great respect and love. And Sudama came away. And of course, it's the custom that when you go to see somebody, you carry a little gift with you. But Sudama was so poor, he didn't have any gift to give. So his wife somehow just took a little chipped rice from the neighbors. A little chipped rice, which is considered food for those who are poor. Wealthy people don't eat that kind of food. Poor people use that. And she took a little handful of that, tied it in a piece of cloth, and then took it. And Sudama didn't even want to give Krishna that. Because he felt embarrassed. How can I give Krishna, who is the Lord of Dwarka? And look at the opulence here. 16,108 palaces. Unlimited opulence. And I'm going to give him some little bit of chipped rice? That's going to be insulting. So he didn't want to give it. But Krishna is the Supreme Lord, seated in the heart of everyone. So he understood what was going on. So he told Sudama, "Sudama, you've come all the way here and you haven't even brought a gift for me." He said, "No, I didn't give. I didn't bring any gift. But what's that there, that little pouch there? Nothing. Yes, there's something there. There's something." And then there was a bit of a wrestling competition between Krishna and Sudama. Sudama, of course, was very frail and weak because he hardly ate any food. And Krishna was quite healthy and strong. So then he was able to snatch away that little pouch that contained the chipped rice. And then he tasted one morsel and said, "Ah, this is delicious." And anyway, it was stale now because Sudama had walked for a couple of days to reach Dwarka. It wasn't even fresh. And he tasted it and said, "Ah, this is delicious. I've never tasted anything as delicious as this." So what is it that Krishna tastes? He tastes the devotion in our offering. He is not simply accepting the offering itself. He has enough of that. Krishna has enough food, he has enough money, he has enough flowers, he has enough of everything. All he is seeking is our devotion through that offering. So Krishna was tasting through that chipped rice the love of Sudama. And then he wanted to take a second morsel. And then Rukmini Devi, his first queen, who had been fanning, she immediately held his hand and said, "Please do not take a second one." She was thinking, how can he eat this chipped rice and that too, which is stale? And she is the goddess of fortune. So she told Krishna, "I'm already bankrupt now. Because you've eaten one morsel of this poor brahmana's food. So everything I have, I've given him now. If you eat another morsel, then I have nothing more to give him." So then Krishna restrained himself. And anyway, Sudama went back home. And when he returned, he couldn't recognize his place. His village was transformed. There was a huge palace there, where his house used to be. And all sorts of beautiful ladies with jewels and silken clothes and everything, they were coming. And then he saw one very beautiful lady coming, fully clothed. And he's wondering, who is this lady? And then realized, it's my wife. And she was very happy. And when Sudama saw this, he was struck with wonder, but he was also nervous. He said, "Oh my God," literally, "Oh my God, Krishna, what is this? Now that I'll have so much wealth, I'll become proud." So he began to pray that, I don't want this. I may get proud of all this wealth. Or even if I don't get proud of wealth, I'll get proud that I got so much mercy that Krishna has given me all this, that I'm such a special devotee, that Krishna gave me all this. So that was Sudama's consciousness. So if that is the consciousness of the devotee who has wealth, a little or more, doesn't matter, then the devotee is safe. Then the devotee will not be bitten by the poisonous fangs of the serpent of wealth. But to the degree the devotee starts becoming proud, "I have wealth," and to the degree the devotee starts utilizing the wealth not just for Krishna's service, but also a little bit for going to the cinema, and a little bit for going here, a little bit for going there, then the poisonous serpent starts biting. So wealth is something holy, actually. Wealth is something very pure. Wealth is divine. It's Lakshmi Devi. She's a goddess. So Srila Prabhupada used to say that there are some sannyasis from other philosophical movements who, when they're offered wealth, they say, "No, I'm a renunciate. I cannot touch wealth. I cannot touch money because I have renounced the world." But Prabhupada said this is false renunciation. Real renunciation means to use the money for Krishna's service, to whom it really belongs. So Prabhupada then in his typical frank fashion said, "If somebody comes to give me money, I'm not going to deny it. I will take it. I will take the money, but I will use it for Krishna's service, not for sense enjoyment." So that is the situation of a devotee who uses anything in the material world for Krishna's service. He accepts whatever can be utilized in Krishna's service. And if there is something that can't be utilized in Krishna's service, then he doesn't use that. One time one gentleman came and asked me, You say we should offer everything to Krishna, so I'll offer alcohol to Krishna and drink it. Valid question. It's valid. But alcohol can't be used in the service of Krishna. We can't offer it to Krishna because Krishna doesn't want alcohol. He doesn't want non-vegetarian foodstuffs. He doesn't want the results of our sinful activities. Although he's very kind and he takes them away anyway. But that doesn't mean that we should commit sinful activities and then say, Krishna, I'm offering this to you. Devotional service means to offer to Krishna what he likes. And then Krishna is pleased and the whole world will then flourish. If the people in the world lived in this consciousness. Okay, so we'll stop here. We have time for just a question or two. Yes. So your question is that when the wealth comes, we may think that this is the blessing of Krishna. But when the wealth goes away, we may not think it's the blessing of Krishna. Yes? If you genuinely think it's the blessing of Krishna, and if you understand the term blessing in the right way, then also when the wealth goes away, you'll think it's the blessing of Krishna. What is the meaning of blessing of Krishna? Does it mean, oh, he has blessed me with so much money so I can enjoy sense enjoyment? That form of blessing? No. What is the blessing? The blessing is that Krishna has given me wealth so that I can live a reasonably decent life. I don't have to be anxious about where my next meal will come from. So that I can now serve him very nicely. And Krishna has also given me money that I can use in his service. Now I can do so many nice things for Krishna. That's the blessing. So if that's our consciousness, then if the wealth is taken away, then also we don't mind. I'll tell you a true story, which I'd like to say. There was a businessman in a place called Jaipur in India. And he would go every morning to have darshan of Radha Govindadev, one of the historical temples there. And he wouldn't start his work without having the darshan. And he was a businessman. I think he had a business, merchant of cloth or something like that. So he had a huge godown in which his goods were stocked. And he had a shop. So one day early in the morning when he came for the darshan of Govindadev, he got a frantic message that there's a fire in your godown. So naturally he left everything and ran to the godown. And then he saw that the fire had spread everywhere in the godown. There was no hope of doing anything. So naturally people had called the fire engine and everything, and the fire engine people were coming and they were trying to douse the fire. So then he simply walked away and walked back to the temple, to Radha Govindadev. And people were flabbergasted. They said, look, your godown is burning and there's millions of rupees of goods here. And you're just walking away because you haven't had your darshan yet in the morning. You should be here. He said, look, there's nothing I can do now. Looking at this fire, I can't do anything. I can't carry buckets and douse the fire. It's too big. The fire engine is doing, it's doing what the fire engine people are doing what they can. So what's here for me to do? Krishna gave me this wealth and he wants to take it away. So in the meanwhile, why should I miss out my darshan, my daily darshan? Wealth will come and go, but my darshan of the Lord, that cannot be taken away. So So he went and had darshan of Govindadev. And he must have prayed, Krishna, you have given it to me. That was your blessing. You have taken it away from me. That's also your blessing. That's what you want. It's yours anyway. It's your money. So you give it and you take it as you please. That's devotional service. When we understand everything is Krishna's, when it comes, I use it in Krishna's service. If Krishna takes it away, well, that's Krishna's will. It's His mercy also. But we should ensure that the money is not taken away because of negligence and carelessness on our part. Right? We have to be cautious because we are protecting Krishna's money. It's Krishna's wealth. Krishna has given it to us, so we protect it. So for example, at night, we don't say everything is Krishna's. Krishna will protect it, therefore we leave. We sleep at night with our doors open. We still take our precautions. We lock the doors. We have our alarm systems because we know this is Krishna's wealth. We have to protect it. So we have that consciousness, then we will be able to see Krishna's taking away of our wealth also as blessings. Okay, any other question? Yes. Okay. Okay, so the question is that there are many young people who are about to launch themselves out into a working career, and in the initial years they are often required to work very hard and work late hours, and generally we are asked that we should work more than 8 hours as sufficient and give time for your Krishna consciousness. So what should young people like this do? Generally one should stick to the principle of not overworking for material things, because that spoils our spiritual life, it spoils our consciousness. And as I was talking yesterday in the evening, we've made our civilization very artificial, where we unnecessarily are forced to work hard. Such is the nature of the modern economy now, that you simply have to work unproductively, unnecessarily, for very, very long hours. Now, if it is possible to change the job or do something that doesn't entail working till very late at night every day, that's good. And if it's a question of survival and one needs that job, that's the only job one has, and what can we do? We have to eat, and the job requires that I work. Well, alright, we can do whatever is necessary, but then we should look for opportunities where we can move to some other type of work where we need not consistently have to work like this. Occasionally, if one has to work, that's understandable, but if it is something that is very regular and the work doesn't leave you time for your spiritual life, and it seems like it's going to go on and on for years and years, then we have a problem. If it's something short term, that's alright. So one should try to balance out. One should be very practical. One should have practical intelligence. Or rather, I will say, we should have practical devotional intelligence. We should be devotional and practical at the same time, and then judge our situation and act accordingly. And in specific cases, we can take guidance from the devotees. Alright? Yes, one question.
Just a comment that the fear, that's from my experience,
as Mataji has commented, is that people are anxious in this world because they're depending on money rather than depending on Krishna. So if you depend on Krishna, then you don't become fearful. And then Krishna sends you the money. He sends you whatever you need for your maintenance. But of course, a word of caution, that we must have faith that is staunch enough for that. That requires very strong faith. Because if you don't have strong faith, and there's no money, and there's no food to eat, and no milk at home to feed your child, and that time, I've seen devotees in situations like that. Untold anxiety. So, but at the same time, certainly we should aspire for this state of consciousness. We should keep this always in mind, that ultimately we are depending on Krishna, we are not depending on money. To the degree we don't depend on Krishna, to that degree there will be fear and anxiety in our life. Thank you very much. It's a very good point. Yes. How can one think of Krishna when one is embarrassed by thoughts of sense enjoyment? By keeping oneself engaged in devotional activities. The more we keep ourselves in Krishna consciousness, busy, hearing, chanting, doing all sorts of other practical services, then automatically we have no time for this. Keep your mind engaged. If the mind is engaged in wrong activities or in being idle, it will be like the devil's workshop. So we should engage the mind and the senses in devotional activities, in the association of devotees. Then gradually we can overcome. By the dint of Krishna consciousness, these things automatically will be taken care of. Brahma received the blessings of the Lord in the second canto, and yet we see in the tenth canto that he fell into illusion. I presume you are referring to the episode when he stole the calves and the cowherd boys. Well, the illusion that we see in the tenth canto under which Brahma was placed was not ordinary illusion of this world. It was not what we call Mahamaya. It was specially designed for revealing the glories of Krishna in Vrindavan. So therefore, that illusion is not to be compared to the illusion under which we ordinary conditioned souls are in our day-to-day activities. Okay? Somebody had a hand raised one last year.
Stepping one step down from staunch belief or staunch faith, and Krishna is the maintainer. One of the main purpose of earning money is the uncertainty, the fear of uncertainty, that what will happen to the family, or we have that fear, and that's the main motto, driving force to earn money. So how can we move from this fear of uncertainty to the staunch belief that Krishna is?
How can we move from the fear of uncertainty about the future to staunch faith that Krishna will maintain us and Krishna will provide? By following the process of Krishna consciousness. When we hear and chant very attentively and sincerely, then automatically the fearlessness comes, that faith comes. Fearlessness comes from faith. And faith comes by service. The more we engage in devotional service without any material expectations, the more the faith will be strengthened in one's heart, and then one will be able to depend on Krishna rather than depending on other things. And the fear of uncertainty will then diminish. Okay, so thank you very much. We will stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. God Premanande. Hare Krishna.